Fear doesn't announce itself. It settles in quietly, like dust on the top of filing cabinets no one opens anymore. It shows up in the way people lower their voices when a certain office door opens, in the way laughter cuts off mid-sentence, in the way everyone suddenly remembers something urgent on their screen when footsteps pass behind them. In our department, fear paid the bills. It kept deadlines tight, turnover constant, and complaints non-existent. We told ourselves that pressure was just professionalism with sharper edges, that humiliation was feedback delivered efficiently, that survival meant adaptability. I learned how to smile while my stomach twisted, how to thank someone for criticism that was really punishment, how to tell myself it wasn't personal when it clearly was. We all did. No one complained, because fear keeps payroll steady. It keeps people showing up early and leaving late. It convinces smart adults to accept things they would warn their friends to run from. We thought the system was unshakable. We were wrong. Someone snapped. And when that happened, the fear we'd been breathing every day finally became visible. I joined the department on a gray Monday in early spring, the kind of morning where the city looks undecided about itself. The building was older than it pretended to be, renovated just enough to feel modern without actually being comfortable. Glass walls, exposed brick, motivational slogans printed in neutral fonts. Efficiency masquerading as culture. It was a mid-sized corporate operations department attached to a larger international firm. Not glamorous, not creative, just important enough that mistakes were costly and deadlines unforgiving. We handled reporting, compliance documentation, and internal audits, the kind of work that keeps companies out of court and executives out of trouble. Invisible when done right, catastrophic when done wrong. My manager, Marek, ran the department the way some people run kitchens or boot camps. He was Polish like me, which initially felt like an advantage. Shared language, shared cultural shorthand. I thought it might mean understanding. It meant expectation. From the first week, it was clear that Marek believed fear was a management tool, not a side effect. He didn't raise his voice often. He didn't need to. His tone did the work. Flat, disappointed, precise. Praise was rare and transactional. Criticism was public, detailed, and surgical. Meetings were performances. Whoever had made the smallest error was dissected while the rest of us watched in silence, grateful it wasn't our turn. Marek would ask questions he already knew the answers to, just to let someone hang themselves in front of the group. He framed it as accountability. We felt it as exposure. At first, I told myself this was just a demanding environment, that I'd worked with worse, that this was the cost of stability. The pay was decent. The benefits were solid. The job market wasn't kind to people who quit on principle. Fear didn't arrive all at once. It layered itself slowly, in the way people stopped asking questions in meetings, in the way emails were rewritten 5 times before sending, in the way sick days went unused, even when people were visibly unwell. There was a shared understanding that HR was not a refuge. HR belonged to the company, not to us. Complaints were seen as career suicide, especially in a department that branded itself as high performance. If you couldn't handle the pressure, you didn't belong. Marek reinforced this without ever saying it directly. He liked to tell stories about former employees who didn't last. He framed them as cautionary tales. Smart people, he'd say, but too sensitive, too slow, too emotional. The message was clear. Don't be them. I noticed how he treated men and women differently without ever crossing into something obvious enough to name. The men were challenged. The women were diminished. Our competence was questioned more frequently. Our tone scrutinized. Our confidence framed as attitude. I learned to modulate myself, to speak less, to soften statements that were already factual, to nod while being corrected for things that hadn't happened. I told myself I was being strategic, that adaptation was intelligence. The department functioned smoothly on the surface. Deadlines were met. Reports were clean. Upper management praised our output without ever stepping inside the day-to-day reality. From the outside, Marek looked like an effective leader. Inside, we were tense, exhausted, and constantly bracing. Break room conversations were cautious. Phones were put face down. Jokes were safe and bland. No one trusted anyone fully, because fear makes people careful and care turns into distance. The warning signs were there. We just learned how to look past them. The breaking point didn't start with a scream or a confrontation. It started with a mistake, a small one. A mislabeled column in a quarterly report prepared by Anya, one of the quietest analysts on the team. Anya was competent, meticulous, and invisible in the way Marek seemed to prefer until it suited him otherwise. She rarely spoke in meetings unless addressed directly. She stayed late without complaint. She took on extra tasks when others pushed back. The error was caught internally before anything went out. Fixable, correctable. In most departments, it would have been a private conversation and a reminder to double check. Marek turned it into a lesson. He called an emergency meeting, made everyone stop what they were doing. Inya sat there while he projected the report on the screen and walked through the mistake line by line. He asked her why it happened. She tried to explain. He cut her off. He asked if she understood the consequences of carelessness. He asked if this job might be too much for her. He asked if anyone else wanted to admit they couldn't keep up. No one spoke, not because we agreed, because fear had trained us well. I watched Anya's face change. Not into tears, into something flatter, quieter, like a door closing. After the meeting, she went back to her desk and kept working. No bathroom break, no air, just back to the screen. I remember thinking that something in her had shifted, that this wasn't going to end the way similar moments had before. Over the next few weeks, Marek's behavior intensified. Deadlines tightened without explanation. Feedback grew sharper. He started copying higher-ups on emails that highlighted minor issues, framing them as patterns. People began making mistakes they never used to make. Fear doesn't improve performance, it fractures it. We were tired, hypervigilant, second-guessing ourselves into inefficiency. I considered speaking up more than once, especially after Marek corrected me publicly for something that wasn't wrong, then refused to acknowledge it when I showed him the documentation. I felt the familiar burn of humiliation and the heavier weight of anger. But I didn't say anything. I told myself I was protecting my position. That timing mattered, that I needed to be smart. Complicity doesn't feel dramatic when you're inside it. It feels like pragmatism. Anya stopped eating lunch with us. She stopped staying late. She started leaving exactly at 5, which in that department was an act of defiance. Marek noticed. He commented on it in a meeting, asking if her priorities had changed. She said nothing, just looked at him, the silence stretched, uncomfortable, charged. Then came the incident no one could ignore. It happened on a Friday afternoon during another meeting that was supposed to be routine. Marek was reviewing metrics, criticizing tone, pace, commitment. He turned to Anya and questioned a figure she'd submitted. She corrected him. Calmly. Accurately. He didn't like that. His voice sharpened. He accused her of being defensive, of lacking accountability, of undermining authority. Something in her snapped. Not violently, not loudly. She stood up. Her hands were shaking, but her voice was steady. She said she was tired of being humiliated. She said the environment was toxic. She said fear was not leadership. The room froze. No one breathed. Marek laughed, a short, dismissive sound. He told her to sit down. She didn't. She walked out. Just like that. No speech, no apology. The door closed behind her and the department felt different immediately, like a spell had been broken or a bomb had been armed. The rest of us sat there stunned. Marek regained control quickly. He dismissed the meeting, told us to get back to work. Said some people weren't cut out for high standards. But the fear had shifted. It wasn't just something we endured anymore. It was something that might explode. Anya didn't come back. By Monday, her desk was cleared. HR sent a neutral email announcing her departure and thanking her for her contributions. No explanation, no acknowledgement of what had happened. But something had changed. Fear works best when it's invisible. Now it had a shape, a moment everyone remembered. A line crossed in public. People started talking quietly, comparing notes, sharing stories they'd never said out loud before. The humiliation, the anxiety, the nights spent replaying meetings in their heads. I found myself included in conversations I'd never been part of before. People asked what I thought, what I'd seen. I realized they'd been watching me too, waiting to see if I'd stay silent forever. Upper management got involved, not because of concern for culture, but because productivity dipped, errors increased, sick days were suddenly used, fear had stopped being efficient. Marek was asked to attend leadership training, framed as development, he came back angrier, more controlled, more careful. The overt humiliation stopped. The tone softened just enough to be defensible. The damage, though, was already done. I eventually left the department. Not dramatically. Not with a speech. I found another role in another division and transferred quietly. On my last day, Marek shook my hand and wished me luck. I wondered if he ever understood what he'd built. Fear leaves residue. Even in healthier environments, I still feel it sometimes. In meetings where voices rise, in feedback that feels sharper than necessary. My body remembers before my mind does. Anya disappeared from my professional life, but not from my memory. She was the one who snapped, but she wasn't the problem. She was the signal. The department kept running. Companies always do. Systems adapt. People replace each other. Officially, nothing went wrong. Unofficially, everything had already broken. That's what fear does. It keeps things moving until it doesn't. And when it stops working, it doesn't just disappear. It leaves scars in the people who survived it, and silence in the places where someone finally refused to.